Today on Your Call, we're talking about media coverage of women's sports. More women are playing and watching sports than ever, and audiences for events like the Women's World Cup continue to grow. So why does sports media still feel like a big man cave? If you're a fan of women's sports, does it bother you that it's an afterthought for the networks? And where do you find great coverage of women athletes and teams? We'll talk to the co-author of a new study that shows that ESPN's coverage of women's sports has actually declined in the past decade, and we'll explore why that is and why it matters. Join the conversation after this news. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the four decades since federal Title IX legislation was enacted, participation by girls and women in sports has exploded. Title IX barred sex discrimination in education programs that receive federal money, including collegiate athletics. And today, 3.1 million girls play high school sports. And in 2012, 200,000 women competed in intercollegiate sports, a record high. Nationwide, women are estimated to make up around 40% of all participants in sports and physical activity. But female athletes continue to receive scant coverage in the rapidly growing world of sports media. Women's sports receive just 6 to 8% of total sports coverage, and in the broadcast media, the numbers are even lower. A new study by researchers at USC and Purdue found that ESPN's flagship program, SportsCenter, which has more than 100 million viewers every month, devoted a scant 2% of its airtime to women's sports. And they found that that percentage has actually shrunk over time. Our guest, Cheryl Cookie, is one of the authors of that study. She's an associate professor of women, gender, and sexuality studies at Purdue University, and she joins us from the studios of WBAA Public Radio in West Lafayette, Indiana. Cheryl, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us are a couple of sports journalists. Joanne Gerstner has had her work appear in several outlets, including the New York Times, USA Today, and ESPN.com. She's covered major sporting events, the Olympics, women's and men's soccer World Cups, the French and U.S. Open tennis championships, as well as numerous Stanley Cup, NBA, and NCAA playoffs. She's currently a journalist in residence at Michigan State University, where she's working on a book about youth concussions and sports. Joanne, great to have you with us.
Much.
And also on the line is Dave Zirin. He's the sports correspondent for The Nation magazine, author of five books, including Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. He hosts his own weekly SiriusXM show, Edge of Sports Radio. You can find his work at edgeofsports.com. Dave, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much.
And we, of course, want you to join the conversation. If you are someone who is active in girls or women's sports, what do you think of the coverage that you see, and what changes would you like to have happen? And if you're someone who, you know, if you're like me, someone who watches ESPN, who listens to sports radio, what do you think of the coverage of women's sports, how it's treated? And if you're a fan, where do you find your coverage if it's not showing up on the mainstream coverage of sports? And finally, if you're someone who cares about women and girls' participation in sports, how do you think the way women's sports are covered or not covered affect the way that women and girls are able to participate in sports? The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-8255. 866-798-TALK. You can also email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. or post a web comment at yourcallradio.org, our website. So I want to start, Cheryl, by talking about this study, which has gotten a lot of response among people who are interested in women's sports and in the sports media more broadly. Talk about how you conducted this study, and, you know, and give us a thumbnail sense of both how it was done and what your key findings were.
Yeah, so this is a longitudinal study where every 5 years we collect data and we sample 6 weeks out of the year. So 2 weeks in March, 2 weeks in July, and 2 weeks in November. And we've kept those time periods consistent across the 25-year span of the study so that we can make comparisons over time. And so what we do is we look at the local televised news affiliates in Los Angeles, as well as ESPN SportsCenter was added to the to the sample in 1999. And all we do is it's the work of undergraduate and graduate students at USC and Purdue. But we turn on the TV and we analyze the amount of coverage and the quality of coverage to get a sense of how men's and women's sports are covered and in what quantities. And what we found is that over the course of the 25 years that there's less coverage of women's sports today than there was in 1989. On ESPN SportsCenter, which we added in 1999, ESPN SportsCenter has remained constant in terms of our sample with its coverage of women's sports. So it typically hovers around 1.5% to 2%, which to us was quite surprising to see the lack of change over time, especially in light of some of the ways in which women's sports has grown in terms of, as you mentioned at the top of the story, in terms of participation, in terms of audience viewership, in terms of live broadcast hours. And so I think, at least based on the sample that we were able to analyze in our study, we're not seeing a whole lot of change over time, and which was very shocking to us.
And so this is really talking about kind of sports news coverage when they're doing the headlines or doing the highlights, what shows up and what doesn't versus...
Yeah, and I think that's...
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that's a key component, too, is that we are looking at the televised news media coverage of sports. So those highlight shows, your local news programs... not necessarily live broadcast coverage or, you know, what's happening in print media, for example. But there has been other research that's looked at those different types of media outlets. And what we see consistently across different media platforms is that the coverage of women's sports is less than that of men's, that women and female athletes tend to be represented in very conventional ways. One of the positive changes that we've seen over the course of the study is the decline or decrease in the kind of sexualized representation of female athletes. However, female athletes are continue to be represented as wives and mothers. And so situating female athletes in those conventional roles, and I think that that's kind of one of the persisting findings over different media platforms over time.
And one of the things I thought that was really interesting, having read your study, I mean, you did a lot of qualitative assessment of the coverage. And part of what you talked about is, whereas, you know, the sports media as a whole, it's fair to call it a real hype machine, right? It's always building up what's the big story, what's the next storyline, and trying to make, you know, whatever the game that's on tonight is seem as exciting as possible. That wasn't necessarily the case with the coverage of women's sports.
Yeah, and I think that's what's important is we're not advocating for simply more coverage of women's sports, because in fact, one of the years of the study that had the highest percentage of coverage of women's sports, which was in 1999, and we were able to capture within our sampling criteria, we were able to capture the 1999 Women's World Cup. And there were lengthy stories about the Women's World Cup, but unfortunately, they all focused on Brandi Chastain removing her jersey and made, you know, kind of sexual innuendos and sexualized jokes about that particular moment, rather than focusing on the tremendous accomplishment and athleticism that was on display in that particular event. So I think it's important to look at the quality. And as you mentioned, what we found was that sports news media, televised sports news media, does a tremendous job at building audiences and creating excitement and a kind of intensity and drawing viewers in when they're talking about men's sports, in contrast to the kind of matter-of-fact, bland presentation of the women's side. And so I think that you know, your viewers and listeners are probably going to say, well, you know, women's sports are less interesting, they're not as exciting as the men's. But what our study points to and what our findings point to is the ways in which the media play a powerful role in terms of shaping our interest in certain sports over others.
So Joanne Gerstner, Dave Zirin, you're both members of the sports media. And I wanted to get, I know you're both familiar with this study and the findings that Cheryl and her co-authors found. Joanne, maybe start with you, kind of what struck you about the results of this study, and how would you respond to it? What would you draw when you see this information?
Well, I wasn't really surprised about the study's results. I think at any time you watch SportsCenter or any other sports program, for that matter, it's kind of apparent. I mean, right now, were a little bit skewed in that if you watch SportsCenter, probably the lead story will be last night's dramatic finish to the England-Japan Women's World Cup soccer game. But in general, once the World Cup is over, women's soccer is going to go back into its cave basically until the Olympics come around. So I'm not surprised about the findings. I guess from my perspective as a female sports writer and the past president of the Association for Women's Sports Media, I think an untold part of this discussion is that there are very few women within sports media helping make decisions at an executive level. I mean, the recent report card checking diversity within sports media says that about 7% of sports media is composed of women. So, you know, we've got problems in front of the camera, we've got problems with presentation, but we also have problems with representation of those of us who are doing this job as a female.
Dave Zirin, what response did you have when you saw the study?
Oh, I mean, my first thoughts when I read the study was I was really not surprised to see the results. But the part of it that really made me think deeply was the part about how women's sports are discussed. I believe it's described as like anchors are eating their vegetables, discussed in this very dispassionate fashion without any of the slam-bang excitement that men's sports are discussed. And that's really important because tastes in sports are created. Media plays a huge role in creating tastes. And so when people say things like they make the market argument, like, oh, it's the marketplace. You know, there's not interest in women's sports. That's why we don't show them. But there's so little presentation of women's sports. How are those interests ever actually going to be cultivated? How are they ever going to be displayed? And in interviewing Cheryl myself on my own show, one of the points that she made, which I thought was really, really profound, was if you look at a website like ESPNW, which is supposed to be a home for women's sports, much of the coverage on ESPNW is women writing about men's sports, or it's coverage about sexism in sports or sexual assault in sports. And these are incredibly important issues without question, but they don't actually provide the platform that they purport to provide, which is to provide actual coverage of women's sports. That's what's still lacking. And I think it's so important we talk about this. The other thing reading the report that I kept thinking about was how important this kind of work is. Like I was remembering back before my sports writing time, but in the 1980s, about how there were several more informal reports about the way black athletes were discussed. And about how, like, there was a report I remember reading about how if a black athlete was talked about, they were more likely to use their first name than last name, or they were more likely to discuss their athleticism than their ability to use their mind. And in calling that kind of stuff out, it played a role in shaping coverage. And I'm hoping that this study can do the same, especially with all the coverage it's getting.
We are talking about the coverage of women's sports on Your Call today. I'm Matt Martin sitting in for Rose Aguilar. And if you are someone who is a fan of women's sports, if you participate in women's sports, maybe you're a coach or a teacher who works with girls who are interested in sports, what do you think of the way that women's sports is portrayed in the news media, and how well and what effect do you think that it has on the way we view women in athletics? The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. I mean, I do want to follow up, Cheryl, in passing. You know, Dave made this, you know, said, you know, one of the arguments that's made about why women's sports aren't covered in the same way that men's sports are is, you know, there's not a market. The audience hasn't developed in the way that it has for men's sports. And certainly, you know, you have a much longer history of men's sports being in the media in the United States and worldwide. And there's a big head start for the building of that audience. I mean, even though, but, you know, in your study, you really focus on the kind of news headlines and highlights kind of coverage of sports. But there is a lot more women's sports that you can see if you've got cable TV than there ever was. I mean, is this just a matter of the audience has to form around that and then, you know, for-profit entities, whether it's Fox Sports or ESPN, will respond and make something?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we talk about in the study is the unevenness of social change. And so, of course, when we look at channels like ESPN and their, you know, sister stations, you know, ESPN2 and ESPNU, and then their online platform, ESPNW, we can find live broadcast coverage of women's sports and stories that'll key audiences to that coverage. And so I think a lot of the discussion of women's sports is happening in these niche markets, and it's kind of creating a sort of ghetto for women's sports that allows the sports world to retain this myth that sports is still by, for, and about men. And so I think that, you know, I'm not sure about these sort of market arguments. Which sports we're talking about, who is the target market that we're referring to, I think needs to be a little somewhat unpacked, right? So I think the Women's World Cup is a great example of that. The viewers for the tournament are up 45%. The tremendous growth in the WNBA over the last couple of years, the viewers for the WNBA finals for the last year's matchup with the Phoenix Mercury and the Chicago Sky was one of the highest rated finals since 2006. So I think that the interest is there, the market is there. It's just how sports journalists understand that audience and understand that market, and which audiences count and which don't. And I think that the lack of news media coverage does in some way factor into kind of constraining and keeping that market potential capped in a way that doesn't allow it to really fully grow and develop in the same kinds of ways that I think men's sports do, because of the exciting highlights and the constant discussions and the ease in which we're able to learn about and follow men's sports.
Joanne Gerstner, you've worked in the mainstream sports media. What can you enlighten us about how those decisions get made, what the assumptions are about, you know, what sports is, who it's for, you know, who your audience is?
Well, it's really challenging because sports media, particularly on the print side, has basically undergone a bloodletting in the last 10 years. I mean, there's a lot of people that have lost their jobs. What they cover and what they used to cover. I mean, for example, almost every newspaper used to have a golf writer. Now, hardly anyone covers golf full-time anymore, and that's, I mean, the PGA Tour. The LPGA Tour is hardly covered at all in this country unless it's a seriously huge major event, and then it might be half. So it's very challenging with resources right now, which is not to offer an excuse. I mean, if something should be covered, something should be covered. To that point, when you're one of the few women sitting at the table at a newspaper or a news organization, it's kind of a challenge when you're a woman, because is it your job as a female sports writer to advocate for more coverage of women's sports? Or should that be something that everyone at the table does because it's the right thing to do? And you kind of walk that walk of, do you want to be stigmatized for being the woman that has to advocate for women's sports, or do you educate and hopefully get progressive colleagues who are obviously mostly male to want to come along with you and cover things like the Women's World Cup and discuss figure skating and things, you know, that fall a lot of times in the women's sports purview. As for ESPNW, to echo what Dave said, ESPNW has undergone many changes since it was launched. It's the focus has changed many times, so I think it's kind of reflected in what he mentioned of having kind of a focus that seems to be a little hodgepodge at times. And it's a tough mission because as a woman, as a sports fan, as someone who cares about my craft, I would love to see the really good stories that are on ESPN be within ESPN itself. I don't want things put into categories and baskets. I mean, if it's a good sports story, it should be a good sports story for everybody, not just placed on a page for ESPNW or put somewhere for another minority. Good sports is good sports, and if you're really into sports, you care about everything, I think, if it's done well.
And I was going to say, as someone, you know, I pay a certain amount of attention to sports. I didn't even know ESPNW existed, right? I mean, I think that's probably the case for lots of sports fans, right? They didn't even know that was there, even though obviously ESPN has about as big a platform as you can get in sports. Go ahead, Cheri, you want to jump in?
I just wanted to echo
both of
Joanne's.
You did in a moment.
Oh, sorry. Just echo Joanne's comments. I think we are sensitive to the kinds of constraints that journalists operate under, organizational practices and institutional constraints. Joanne mentioned the decline in print media and the beats. But I think that, and I want to echo, too, that it's not just about getting more women, although I think that's a piece of the puzzle. One of the things that we advocated in the study is not just having more women as journalists, as editors in those decision-making positions, who are then able, from those positions of power, to advocate for more and better coverage of women's sports. We need men as well, right? And so this isn't it's about an investment in women's sports, and not necessarily just simply let's get more women involved, because we can really see how that's been reflected on some of the sports programs. I think ESPN is a classic of this. We see a lot of women who are on the sidelines, who are doing, you know, the kind of reports from the court during games and those sorts of things, which is a step in the right direction. But we need to see more women and men who are in the positions of power to kind of dictate what gets covered, really advocating for better coverage of women's sports.
Dave Zarin, you wanted to jump in?
Oh, just I remember when ESPNW started, the real concern was that it would provide an excuse for ESPN to segregate women's voices. And they would be able to say, no, look, we're trying to develop these tastes, we're trying to develop a platform. But at the end of the day, it would serve to shunt these voices off to the side. And one of the things that's frustrating about it, and it's not even to pick on ESPN, because obviously the study is about all of sports media, but this, I think, is some of the problem in terms of how we develop this, because there's some fantastic writers and there is some terrific reporting that goes on at ESPNW. And as was said, a good story should just be a good story. If something breaks, it should be on the main page, and it should be something that you attempt to draw in as many eyeballs as possible to actually see that story. And so the worry is that what I don't want to see is the creation of a separate space or a destination for people who care about women's sports. I want women's sports to be able to have a full flowering within the broader sports culture, and it really should. I was asked recently to name the five athletes that I think are the most like appointment television, and I wasn't doing this to be like a good progressive or good this or anything like, but just with saying it off the top of my head, three of the five people were women. And that's kind of amazing. Is a Serena Williams, Ronda Rousey, who's of course a Ultimate Fighter, and a wrestler by the name of Sasha Banks, who needs to be seen to be believed. These were the folks who I was like, these are the people I need to see if they're on, along with people like Steph Curry, LeBron James, etc. And so it's like I want more people to be exposed to the Ronda Rouseys of this world, to be able to have a sense of what's out there and not have it be in this segregated space, because I think we all suffer for that. And I especially think a lot of, frankly, men suffer from that, because sports has a huge political effect on the culture. And you want men who might have sexist ideas in their heads to see powerful women do amazing things. That's always been a facet of the sports world, when people you don't expect because of your own segregation, isolation, beliefs, when people you don't expect emerge and do amazing things, oftentimes it forces people to challenge the ideas in their own heads.
Dave, I know you've got to leave us in about a minute, so I want to ask one final question. So you were just pointing out the importance of having, you know, women's sports figures, you know, out in the public, partly for men's perceptions and consumption. I think that a lot of folks have thought over time it's important to have women's sports represented better, so that particularly girls will have role models that have a sense like, this is something I can participate in and excel in. But, you know, we have a lot of participation by women and girls in sports now in a way we didn't 40 years ago.
Right.
Is maybe the model that women's sports is forming, where it's more participating and less spectating, maybe healthier?
Oh, I mean, yes and no. I mean, because the participation issue is great. We always want more access, particularly if we're talking about economics and class and not just gender. You want more people having access to sports without question. And it's a global question as well, as we've seen in the recent World Cup, as far as what countries have been able to compete to the fullest and what haven't, is often a question of economics and development. But at the same time, it's like I think that the value of spectatorship in the United States, in terms of sports, is that there is a very strong political value for the culture as a whole, and it changes people's assumptions about what can or cannot, what people can or cannot do. And that's why the importance of focusing on LGBT athletes who take the field, and why a lot of people see that as very important that that space be created, is because people also understand that that can have a very important ricochet effect on the culture.
I've got to break in. We'll be back right after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. If you have a perspective that you've not yet heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org or simply post your question on the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Following that at noon today, Bina from our friends at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco.
If you are just joining us, this is Your Call. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. And today we are talking about news coverage of women's sports. Tomorrow we're going to be revisiting a conversation that Rose Aguilar had with Lindsay Addario, award-winning photojournalist. And on Monday we're going to be talking about the struggle over oil drilling in the Arctic. That's coming up. But today, as I say, we are talking about women's sports. Just before the break, we had to say goodbye to Dave Zirin, who is the nation's sports correspondent, but also with us for the rest of the hour are Cheryl Cookie. She's Associate Professor of Women's Gender and Sexuality at Purdue University, and she's the co-author of the recently released study, It's Dude Time, A Quarter Century of Excluding Women's Sports in Televised News and Highlight Shows. And also with us is veteran sports journalist Joanne Gerstner. She's worked for the New York Times, USA Today, and ESPN.com, and she is currently a journalist in residence at Michigan State University. We're talking about how women's sports are covered or not covered, how they're miscovered, and why it matters. We'd love to have you join the conversation at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And we actually have on the line Denny in Richmond, who wanted to come in and be part of the conversation. Denny, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me. I just wanted to share some of my 6-year-old daughter's thoughts about this with you.
Sure.
She's up at camp right now, so she would be happy to get on the line and talk to you. So, yeah, I mean, right off the bat, she's a big baseball fan. You know, we're watching baseball on TV. We go to baseball, and just out of the blue in the third inning, Daddy, why don't girls get to play professional baseball? And I said, good question. They should be able to, right? And she says, right, when I'm president, girls can play professional baseball. And, yeah, I mean, I think I agree with this segregation argument about putting things off to the side like that. It just, in light of what's been happening with race in this country and gender, I just think it's outrageous that there isn't equal time for sports to be seen. I mean, it's even hard for us. What we have to do is we have to seek out, you know, when does UC Berkeley have the women's softball game that we can go see? And we're, like, searching their website, and we're looking in the paper, and we can't even find when the games are. So I think it's gotten really ridiculous, and I hope somebody comes up with a creative strategy to sue these guys, to sue the networks and the people who are feeding off all this money from advertising and sports, which is just as obscene as, you know, what's happening with our political process, I think. And that's how we got Title IX. That's how we got the improvement in having girls' sports available, which I applaud. Well, we had to go sue because it's a constitutional right to know and to be able to know how women and girls can participate in this multi-million, billion-dollar industry. We're locked out right now. My daughter is locked out, and that's not fair.
Denny, thanks for the call. Cheryl Cookie, how would you respond to both, you know, Denny talking about his daughter and her experience and reaction, and also the idea of, you know, what kind of remedy could actually make this a more equal playing field?
Well, Denny, I would just love to be able to chat with your daughter. She sounds like an amazing girl who's going to become an amazing woman. I'd recommend, and this doesn't really necessarily address your issue, but have her look up Jackie Mitchell. She was the woman pitcher who struck out Babe Ruth. And there's been some great, I think there's a children's book that was written about her as well, so she might find that interesting. In terms of this question around just, you know, kind of access and visibility, I think that it is important for young girls, and I think as Dave Zirin was saying, for boys and men and women to be able to see positive images, positive representations of female athletes in the media, and kind of going beyond just our study, when we look at the kinds of conversations and the ways in which female athletes are represented or the lack thereof, I think it does say something very powerful about how we understand the role of women in the world of sports. And I think that extends to how we see women in the culture in general. And so it shouldn't be a matter of, you know, having to dig deep and click on 14 different links or scroll down 20 different stories on your smartphone app to find out what the score of the World Cup game was last night, which is what my experience was when trying to just kind of find out what happened. That the kind of accessibility, the visibility of men's sports does help to continue to promote that sport. And I think without it, women's sports will continue to struggle. I wonder how much of, Denny mentioned having some sort of law or a lawsuit, something similar to what happened in Title IX. The problem is that Title IX applies to educational institutions and so that receive federal funding. And so the government can then implement laws that would sort of oversee how those funds get distributed, which is why we have Title IX and maybe not an equivalent in the world of the media. But I think with the news media, and particularly on the local affiliates, the local affiliate news isn't about generating revenue. I mean, it is, but it's also about conveying to viewers what's happened in the world that day. And so, maybe we need a kind of a similar type of a regulation or ruling that would require networks or news media outlets, sports media outlets, to ensure that a certain percentage of their staff were women or devote a certain amount of their time to stories on women's sports. I just don't know how that happens. So if Denny and his daughter want to, lead the charge on that front and start a social movement, I'm right there with them.
Joanne Gerstner, we got an email I wanted to get your response to. It's from a listener, Rick, in San Francisco, whose subject line is, could it just be laziness? He says, say I'm a sports journalist with baseball, football, and basketball down cold. A little golf, some hockey. I've got a full year of stuff to yak about. Now I'm expected to go out and learn who's who and what's what in women's sports. Feigning interest in the World Cup last year killed my vacation. So just that idea of, when you're asking the sports journalists who've come up in this certain organization about what's important, what they've needed to learn, what they've needed to know, they actually, being interested in something requires you have a background in it, some sense of connection to it. And for a lot of the people in the sports media, that's not their experience.
Well, I can kind of implode that a little bit in that I'm not a huge football fan, but yet I've covered football all my life. So I've had to learn it. I've had to get educated in it. And I think that's just part of your job. So if using that paradigm as an excuse, I think that's just saying, hey, well, I don't care, so I don't have to learn about it. Well, guess what? You do. It's part of your job. And if you want to be well-versed and doing your job correctly, you do need to know about it. So, most of the journalists I know recognize a good story. A good story is a good story, and that's what you want. Now, what's interesting to me is I've had conversations with female athletes at very high levels, and, the old argument is, should, like Michelle Wheat go play golf on the men's tour? Should Serena Williams go play against guys? And the interesting argument is, does a female athlete have to compete with or against men to then be validated as a real athlete? I mean, can Jenny Finch still be the best pitcher in softball by competing in softball, or would she then have to strike out major leaguers to get validated? And that kind of goes to, you know, the argument of, you know, should women be playing Major League Baseball? Should women be playing in the NBA? And it's kind of, it's a really interesting, both sociological, but also ultimately a ratification of what we believe in a society. Does a woman have to prove herself against men to be considered legitimate, or can you be legitimate, which I certainly argue Serena Williams is the most legitimate of all time, you know, by dominating in your own sport against your own gender? I don't know. It's an interesting question, which I think we're constantly searching for the correct answer, and the correct answer is constantly changing.
Let's go next to Sonny in Salinas, who wants to join the conversation at 866-798-8255. Sonny, thank you for calling the program.
Hi.
Go ahead.
This is Sonny. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add a couple 2 cents about girls and female surfing. I'm coming from Hawaii, and I've been in the broker in the grocery business for quite a while, and my girlfriend, Betty DiPolito, has been working hard for many, many years. She's a ex-surfer as well, doing TV spots for, I think it's called Fly Girls TV, and she has had the worst luck getting sponsorship, and I've tried in the grocery biz to try to get some of my people, my brands, to sponsor her, and it's so sad when you see these struggling female athletes doing such a great project in their community with lack of support. So just kind of add my 2 cents.
Thank you. And it makes me think about, you know, when we talk about sports coverage, how so much of the attention goes obviously to men's sports, but also to very particular sports, and a lot of the real growth for women's participation in sports is in sporting activities that aren't in the big three. I don't know. Cheryl, you want to weigh in?
In terms of our study, I think we did find that when women's sports was covered, it was most likely to be NCAA or professional women's basketball, but primarily NCAA basketball. And that, I think that's a sport that's growing in popularity. And in terms of the kind of challenge around getting sponsorships, I think that that's a struggle that many female athletes face. I think sponsorships for women in certain sports and in sports outside of, you know, basketball, tennis, you know, kind of the less so-called popular sports for women, they struggle more so because the salaries are so low. And so for many female athletes, getting sponsorship is so key and so important in terms of just being able to pay for training and pay for, you know, living expenses. And so I think, you know, often it's, you know, female athletes are kind of placed in a double bind where that, you know, they can capitalize off of what matters in the culture, which is their appearance and their sexuality. And so those athletes that are able or willing to do that oftentimes are those that are able to kind of garner that kind of sponsorship attention. And I think related to that, the ways in which the Women's World Cup is being discussed, the U.S. Women's World Cup team, as not really having a key star, I think really speaks to how it is that Abby Wambach and Megan Rapinoe, I'm sorry, I always want to call her Rapinoe, don't fit into our conventional ideas of femininity and gender. And so they're maybe less attractive to garnering that kind of star role, given the ways in which sponsorship dollars are often distributed in women's sports. So I'm glad that Sonny brought up that issue. I think that is a kind of a key component, and sponsorship is tied to some of these other issues related to media coverage and visibility as well.
I was thinking back to Denny in Richmond, his daughter watching the baseball game, you know, being a young girl at a men's sporting event. And I was thinking about, I'm sure you've read it, Cheryl, Wendy Baker, sports journalist, wrote a critique of your study kind of saying this is a great time for women's sports coverage. Things are never been better. They're improving. And one of the points that she makes is that, you know, ESPN, for instance, plays a lot more women's college basketball than you know, they play hundreds of games in a year that are on the air people can watch. And they find out that the people who are primarily watching are older men, just like most of the other stuff that they're putting on the air. And so, I mean, is part of this about actually developing a women's audience for women's sports? I mean, is maybe the most powerful thing that somebody can do if they want to see women's sports represented in the media is
go see a game?
I think that's a part of the issue. I would kind of counter or disagree with this idea that women should be held responsible for watching women's sports, or it's up to women to turn in to watch women's sports. I just don't necessarily buy into that argument, because I think when we look at the percentages, the majority of sports fans overall are men, although that I think that's starting to change. When we break it down by certain leagues, certainly the NFL, I think, is a really interesting example of kind of the increased presence of women as fans in that particular sport. So to suggest that somehow, you know, men can only watch men's sports, or women can only watch women's sports, or women must be fans of women's sports, and I'm not sure if that really gets at the core of the issue. And I wouldn't disagree with Wendy Baker. Certainly ESPN has made some tremendous changes in terms of their broadcast coverage of women's sports, and the NCAA tournament in particular. But to me, I think that speaks to the our findings in an even more powerful way. The fact that ESPN on ESPN2 or ESPNU is broadcasting more sports and more women's sports, then my question is, why aren't we seeing more coverage of women's sports on ESPN SportsCenter in our sample, which was just a randomly selected 6 weeks out of the year? I do think that there are these moments like the World Cup, like the Olympics, these high-profile international sporting events, wherein we do see a spike in the media coverage, a spike in the news media coverage, a spike in print articles about women's sports. And that's great. But once those events end, what the research shows is that the coverage then declines. And it's as if the news media, the sports media, forget that women are playing sports the other, 355 days out of the year.
Cheryl Cookey is an associate professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Purdue University and co-author of a new study that shows actually a decline in coverage of women's sports by ESPN on its SportsCenter program. And also they studied L.A. Local news outlets there, their sports coverage. Also with us is Joanne Gerstner, who is a sports journalist whose work has appeared in several media outlets, including The New York Times, USA Today, and ESPN.com. We're talking about the coverage of women's sports, and we invite you, if you are someone who is active as a fan or a participant in women's sports, what do you think of the coverage that you see, whether it's of the Women's World Cup or other women's athletics activities, and what changes would you like to see, and what difference do you think this makes to girls or women who want to participate in sports, to our society more broadly, to have women as active and competitive athletes be represented in the news media. The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You got an email here from Carol who says, despite the 45% increase in viewership for the FIFA Women's World Cup match featuring the U.S. team, the perception is that women's sports lack the excitement of men's sports. Americans like the irresistible force meeting the immovable object kind of action. That's the main reason soccer, the beautiful game, will never be of interest to Americans beyond major events like the World Cup. Yeah, she goes on to say, Americans are also uncomfortable with lesbian athletes. Lesbians are good for male fantasy, but unattractive to advertisers. Carol, thank you so much for that email. Let's go next to the phone. So, KDF in Oakland, welcome to your call.
Thank you very much. There is a very popular AM news and traffic station in the Bay Area that has twice hourly in-depth sports coverage, and they drive me crazy. For example, yesterday there was an American woman at Wimbledon that surprisingly defeated someone who was much higher up in seeds, and every sportscast where they mentioned her, they put it at the back, at the very end of the sportscast, and they said it as if she had done something wrong, where if it had been a young male at Wimbledon who had amazingly defeated somebody who was expected to do much better than him, they would have led with it throughout the day. And also, this same station has this amazing habit of, no matter what's happening with women's sports, it's always at the end of their little commentary. That, you know, that the amount of times that they've led with women's sports, you know, can be counted probably on one hand.
KDF, thanks so much for the call. Joanne Gerstner, any thoughts about those priorities and just the way the stories are presented? Joanne, are you with us? Well, Cheryl, maybe you want to weigh in there. I know you're.
I'm happy to jump in. I think Katie's comment, at least, is reflected in our findings. In this most recent iteration of the study, and in prior iterations of the study, all of the lead stories within our lead stories within the broadcasts in our sample started with men's sports. So there was no broadcast of the news or of the highlight shows that started with a women's sports story. And so I think that, you know, she's right on in terms of that. And we do tend to see, I think that matters. And I imagine Joanne, as a journalist, would maybe echo in here that it does matter what story is the lead story, because the lead story within a broadcast, or whatever article appears on the front page, or whatever story is on the front cover of a magazine, that is a clear message to viewers and audiences that this is the most important story that's happening in the world of sports today. And so we're going to lead with this story, or it's the most what the producers see as the most interesting or captivating story of that day. And so to have, you know, 6 weeks of coverage of sports within our sample and you know, 7 days of the week, y'all can do the math, and to not have any of those broadcasts lead with a women's story, I think is a really powerful message about how those producers and journalists view the importance of women's sport.
And Joanne Gerstner, I understand we have you back with us. So we had a caller who was asking about how, you know, the kind of, she was talking specifically about sportscast on a particular radio station, and the way that when women's sports were on there at all, they happen at the end of that broadcast. Talk about just how, you know, your experience working in news organizations, working in sports media, how those priorities get set and where women's sports get placed.
Well, unfortunately, the priorities usually are that the men's sports do come first. You know, the NFL, things that are happening that are big at the moment take priority. Now, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just the way it is. But there is power within the audience, and especially today with social media, you know, complaining to a station saying, hey, I'd like to hear more about Abby Wambach playing for, you know, the U.S.-based soccer league, things like that. That has an impact. And the more people that get mobilized and say, hey, this is something I want, guess what? You know, newspapers, radio stations, television stations, they want an audience. They want to make money. So if the audience is demanding something, they're going to be more inclined to provide it. And it's a marketplace economy, and guess what? We have the power as the audience to influence the marketplace. And, you know, when people tell me, oh, I wish there was more soccer coverage, well, like, well, have you called the sports editor? Have you emailed? Have you done anything? Well, no, I just thought they'd know. Well, guess what? They don't. You have to say something. And I really understand the frustration. Sports talk radio is pretty much a wasteland for women. There's very few women on sports talk as hosts. There's not that many women that are guests on sports talk radio. So having the influence to maybe bring different elements to the conversation is something that's lacking, and Cheryl's study was definitely helpful in pointing that out once again.
No, if you listen to especially sports call-in radio, a woman calls in, it's like they've seen a unicorn, right? They just say, oh, my God, what is this?
Well, we get sexualized. I can't even tell you
Indeed.
How many sports talk shows I've been on as an expert guest for the Olympics, for the NBA. And when I'm on hold, I hear what they're talking about the show, and it's talking about women in very sexual terms, or she's ugly, or she's a babe. And it's just, it's really, you know, you get the hint that you're not necessarily welcome there. So why would I go then continue to listen to a show that doesn't seem to respect me for who I am as a woman? So it's kind of like we need to speak up if it's something that we care about. And I think we do all collectively care about women's sports in growing numbers. If this is something you want, ask for it, demand it, go to Twitter. You know, there are measures we can all take to have our voices heard. And if someone's a smart programmer and they get enough people asking for something, I'm putting it on the air.
Let's go to, we have a caller from Oakland who wanted to be part of the conversation. Welcome to your call.
Yes. I'm not surprised by all this. I don't know why women continue to be surprised by what's happening here. Because I'm just going to name, you know, the word patriarchy. We're in a patriarchy. We're supposed to be sexual objects for that patriarchy. We are supposed to be in our place. I see it happening in this country, and this is just another manifestation of that. And then around the globe, what the reports about what are happening to women around the globe and in this country, what happened to me growing up with a misogynist family and lots of severe abuse with men. So I don't see why there's this surprise, but we have to keep fighting, and we have to fight a lot against this. But I think it's important to say that everything is controlled by insecure, mostly white men, and it's a patriarchy. And I don't know why there's this shyness about not naming that.
Thank you so much for that call. I want to take one more call and then get a last thoughts from both Joanne and Cheryl. Rick in Santa Cruz, welcome to your call. If you could be brief, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I think the key phrase that I've been real careful to listen for is the phrase popularity. In other words, everything's based on statistics, surveys, and et cetera. And a statistical anomaly, like people calling in all of a sudden, a good statistician's going to ignore that, although those people do need to be heard. I have a general comment. You guys that are into sports, you can all look all that stuff up. I don't want to hear the sports myself at all, period.
Rick,
great. Thank you for the coverage.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. So we have patriarchy and we have popularity. Cheryl Cookie, Joanne Gerstner, let's start with you, Cheryl. We've got about a minute and a half here. Last thoughts from you.
Yeah, I think this is my reaction to the study was that I was surprised that I was surprised. I think what the first comment pointed to is the ways that what we see in the world of sport is indicative to what's happening in the wider culture. And so sport is not a microcosm. It's not its entity on its own. It exists within the larger culture, the larger society, and is influenced and impacted by things that are happening as well as impacts and influence things that are happening in the society. So, yeah, we probably shouldn't be surprised if we look at just sort of gender dynamics in as a whole. I would hope that we would have more change over time. I think, as the study points out, there has been some change in some really key and important areas, but we still have more ways to go. And I think what Joanne points to is, you know, how it is that we can mobilize that voice for those of us who, you know, maybe unlike Rick, but for those of us that do think women's sports are important and do want to hear about what's happening in the world of sports and want to support female athletes, that we do need to kind of create a voice. And that's what this study is really about, is about bringing attention to this particular issue in hopes that some change will happen. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to discuss that with your viewers.
Cheryl Cookie is this.
Or listeners, I should say.
Yeah, that's what we are on the radio. And I'm sorry, Joanne, we don't have time to get a final thought from you, but I want to thank you so much for being on the program. Cheryl Cookie, who was just talking, is an associate professor of women's gender and sexuality at Purdue University. You can see the new study that she and her co-authors have come out with called It's Dude Time, A Quarter Century of Excluding Women's Sports in Televised News and Highlight Shows at our website, yourcallradio.org. And Joanne Gerstner, veteran sports journalist at New York Times, USA Today, and ESPN.com. Thank you so much for being with us here on Your Call. I'm Matt Martin. Thanks for listening. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll bring back a conversation Rose had with Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist Lindsay Addario about her memoir, It's What I Do, A Photographer's Life of Love and War. Addario has spent more than a decade documenting the human costs of war in many countries, including Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and the Congo. How do the images shape our views of war? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Knock Wynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.